Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We're here this morning for the engineers' budget work session. And I see we've got some interested citizens along with that. So I will turn it over to Lisa first, if she's got anything that she wants to say.
I'm going to withhold my comments until after we've had this discussion with these gentlemen.
And if I could, Paul, I'll
step in because I'm the reason that we're handling this the way we're handling it. Tyler and I have had a couple of conversations, and as you guys both know, we've been having conversations now for almost 2 years about 530th as it runs between Ames and Gilbert, and felt like that the appropriate way to start our county engineer budget this year was asking these guys to come in so we could have that conversation. Right now, 530th fits in our construction calendar for the next fiscal year. Clearly, we don't have any funding tied to it right now. So I thought this was a good place to start our conversation and let these guys visit with us and go, and then we can have the rest of the conversation. So that's how this happened.
Okay. Very good. Well, then we'll turn it over to these gentlemen.
How about starting, since we're recording everything, go through and introduce yourselves and let everybody know who you're with and why you're here.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Tyler Holk, and I'm with the Gilbert School Board serving as president this year.
I'm Lindsay Beecher, superintendent at Gilbert.
And I'm John Popp, the mayor of Gilbert.
Very good.
Clearly huge interest for you guys with the high school being located where it is, the traffic, especially school-age traffic that we see coming, going north and south out of the houses that are located in Ames but are part of the Gilbert school system. We talked a lot about it's a, you know, between a $1.5 and $2 million project to pave from 190th up to the Gilbert city limits. We shared with you guys several years ago when we started talking about this that that's a tough funding deal. It's not a farm-to-market road. It's all local funds. It's not something we readily have access to. We did find a way to put it on our five-year calendar, Darren, for the last 2 years, and it's moved through to the point that if we can identify funding for it, it rolls into our construction season for next year. We just got to find a way to identify that $1.5 to $2 million in order to be able to get it done. Tyler, you indicated in one of our conversations that you guys had some ideas on that, and so I'd like you to talk to us about it.
Yeah, so I'll share a couple comments. Lindsay, jump in, or John from the city. But certainly, it, as Rick has said, it's a concern for the Gilbert School District with the completion of the pavement up to 190th. As I said, just as an example this morning, there's a lot of traffic there. Unfortunately, it's really concentrated just a couple times during the day, but it is a lot of traffic. So we would like to see this move forward. We'd also like to have in the discussion just the potential for a bike path or a connection, because as I understand it, in looking at what's happening up to 190th, there is a bike path there. The challenge will be, what do you do with 190th at that point? I mean, because that's a busy road that doesn't have an intersection at this point. But from a school standpoint, and Lindsay, jump in, I mean, we do have some Pebble money, but that's money, as you know, that's used for lots of different things in the school district. So I think sitting here as wanting to have some collaboration with the county, I think the district would be willing to put in money, but we're not talking about seven digits. We're talking about low six digits, if that. And I don't mean to speak for the board. This would need to be approved for the board. But round numbers right now, it's about a $500,000 budget that we have for Pebble, and there's lots of things that are identified like buses and such. But I would say that if we could approach this with different parties coming with some monies, we certainly would want to partner with the county on getting that done. And again, getting it done means paving, but also providing for the strategy for a bike path or connecting the Ames all the way up to Gilbert. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many years ago when I was serving on the Parks and Rec, we researched the potential of a bike path running along the railroad track. Mm-hmm. And that didn't come to fruition, obviously, But at that point, if I remember, there was the potential for a $50,000 grant that we ended up not exercising because we needed the matching funds and obviously to make the project complete. But if we think about the potential for the school district to kick in some money, potential to seek out some grants, I don't mean to put John on the spot, but if the city had anything, I mean, I can see where we'd have some collaboration. Mm-hmm. To be really clear, that's going to be a supportive type of funding. I think we would still look to the county for a significant mm-hmm. portion of that funding. So that's my comments, Lindsay.
I'd agree with what Tyler said. You know, that is a mile and a half there, approximately. It's highly traveled now. It's going to get even more highly traveled with our kids back and forth. We want to make sure it's a safe means to the building. We would look at any type of collaboration that we could. There are probably grants that we could look at out there. The main thing is we wanted to, and you guys have seen us here before, we've talked about this many times. It is very, very important because that's a precious commodity that we have going down that road, and we want to make sure that it's a safe and viable means that they can get there. I don't know that there's very many probably in Story County, or if there are any, that schools that have a gravel road that leads right up pretty much next to their school. And like Tyler said, the amount of travel on that is going to be big. So we're open to trying to do anything. I can't speak for the board, or neither can Tyler, but I know that we can speak from the standpoint that we want to work with you to try to get this paved.
Thank you. John?
Well, I would echo their same comments about collaboration. The projects we've done in the past have been the most successful, and we've had everybody working together. And that's, you know, involved the school, it's involved the township, it's, you know, there's lots of opportunities there that have worked well when we've brought those pieces together. One question I would have for Darren, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know we talk about this 2016-17, but there's many steps to this process. I'm sure there's a planning step, there's a bidding step, and then there's a construction step. If we set the whole funding thing aside and we just talk about schedule, I think it would be helpful for everybody to understand that even if this gets funding tomorrow, it doesn't get built the next day. So if you could comment just a little bit about what the major steps would be and an idea of what those windows would be for scheduling, I think that would help people understand that if we get through all this other stuff, it still doesn't happen within days. There's a process there.
Yeah, like Rick said, it's been in our program for a couple of years now, so we're planning for it in 17 as if it was funded. This is how we operate. If it's in our program, we move forward. So we've been designing the project, so we're well into the design portion. At this point, there's no way it could be built next construction season. We have to purchase it right away, and I believe that might be difficult on this project, so that's going to take a little extra time probably. So the next construction season, calendar year 17. Calendar year 17.
You're talking about next spring, 15 months from now.
Yeah. That would be the earliest this could happen if everything went as planned.
Yeah, if funding's available, if we don't run into any roadblocks, it would be a next spring, early summer kind of construction. You're dealing with it as it exists all of this school year, and either most or all of the next school year, even if we come out of this. And March 15th is kind of the drop-dead date. Well, it is the drop-dead date for us. Either we're going to have funding in the budget for this project or we're not at that point.
I would comment on a couple of things. I haven't talked to the board about this yet, but since we're this far into design, a couple of things have come up, unfortunate things. We've come to realize there is a district tile runs the entire mile. You can't pave over a 100-year-old district tile. That's just going to cause you nightmares in the future because it blows out. You're under pavement. So we're trying to locate it. It's even hard to locate it, so the records aren't very good. It's hard to locate this time of year. We were hoping it was far enough out in the ditch bottom where we were going to put the bike path on the east side of the road so it wasn't over the tile. Initial look, it could be close to the road than we were anticipating, but we'll get that figured out and let you know that if it's close enough to the pavement, we're going to have to move that for an entire mile, so we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars to move that tile out. So that could be.
So currently there's no issues with the tile?
No. I don't think we've ever even worked on it, fortunately, so we don't have a good idea where it even is.
Right. So if we do locate it close enough to the roadway, now we're talking about an additional several $100,000 expense that's going to have to be borne by the district, the members in that district.
Well, it is in the county right away now. In the past, the county has paid, if it's in the road right away, the road department paid for that.
Well, where's the outlet? I mean, it's coming across into the county right away from someplace, isn't it?
Yeah, it starts right at the intersection of 180th, and it goes all the way down to 190th Moose Road. There's a box culvert intake down the bottom down there. But
if it's close to the existing roadbed, is moving it the best option, or is getting more right of way? So it runs on the west. We think it runs on the west side of the road.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that.
So is the best option then moving it, or shifting a little further to the east and getting more right of way up the east side? And I don't even know what issues we run into in terms of buildings that are in close proximity on the east side.
It's the south end. We're having a little difficult time squeezing through. There's the old barns on the one side and the houses on the other. So the bike path, we move to the east side of the road. We're going to have to probably put some curb and gutter through that section so we can squeeze the bike path up as close as we can so we're not getting too close to those houses. The other issue is further up north, when those big new transmission lines came in, I made them offset their large pole in anticipation for that bike trail. So to move it much further over, we're getting into that huge transmission line pole, and that would be very expensive to move.
Maybe go without any electricity and all that. Yeah. You go back to Dark Ages for a little while. It's kids and eight, hot spots. Just have three hot spots. I'll take care of.
That's just one thing to keep in mind. It might be some additional costs there. Another question to start thinking about is this bike trail going to be year-round maintained? Hoping not, but if it is, we might have to design it thicker for some heavier vehicles to plow it. And if it is closer to the road in some sections, that road plowing snow is going to go right on the bike path. So year-round maintenance could be difficult on that. And then the 190th intersection, we'll have to talk about possibly making that a four-way stop in the future. There's bike traffic going through there. And
that would ruin all of the drag races that are going right there right now.
Yeah.
That'd be a good starting point, though.
Tell me this, percentage-wise. How much does putting a bike trail in cost us per mile? So as I do the round numbers in my head, us doing a road is roughly $1 million a mile, maybe just over $1 million a mile. What is it for a bike path?
We do so little of that. We don't have good numbers, but our estimate right now is about $200,000 a mile.
$200,000 a mile.
Yeah, it might be a little less than that,
but a $300,000 project for the bike. The bike path portion is roughly a $300,000 project.
Yeah.
And this will just be on one side of the road.
10 foot wide on one side.
10 foot wide.
But separated from the road.
Yes.
So not a lane.
I mean, that would be ideal. Really, when you stop and think about it, it could be separated from the road.
Well, if it's separated from the road, we're likely to have a better chance of getting a grant from.
Right.
I remember your comment the last time when we did the one down the traffic cop was that they really don't like to fund grants if the bike path is actually attached to the roadway.
Oh, yeah. We'd actually kind of made them a promise we wouldn't even apply for one of those. And the other issue to keep in mind, too, is if right-of-way purchasing is an issue out there, buying it from the bike path could be a problem. You can't condemn for a bike path. We were going to try to run the whole right-of-way through as a road project and see how that goes, but that could be a potential issue for the bike path.
If somebody, and we've got one landowner out there that seems to be really, really hesitant on the idea of any ground for...
In the past, they have been, yes.
Where do they fall in this project?
They're on the west side of the road, so that was another reason for putting the bike path on the east side.
Okay.
there as I know.
Well, Ames is coming up on the east side of what they call Grant, right? They're not coming up on the west side.
I think it is.
They moved it to the west side at the last minute.
So they're on the west side, and so now we'd be talking about you'd have to cross 190th at an angle.
Well, I really like the additional opportunities for collaboration, particularly in lieu of the bike path. And I really think for that stretch, the safest separation from the main roadway would be a more preferable way of looking at it. And I think from the standpoint of the community, and even though it's a bike path, but I look at the people who might want to walk and pedestrian and so forth, to me that would enhance, you know, all the other activities in that particular area.
Well, it ties Gilbert then to 288 Monk.
288.
Yeah. Which is a really cool amenity.
Right. Right. And then, of course, as you notice, there's new subdivisions that's going up just west of the old Moose Lodge, and so that's going to be quite a number of homes.
Those are all Gilbert students.
Exactly.
That entire area is in Pell's.
Develops. Yeah.
So just throwing something out there, and I mean, you know, we've got to just work our way through and figure this out, but just see if something like this is palatable to everybody here. I really like, so we used a model on Country Club Road coming out of Nevada, where the city of Nevada, the school system, the county, and the local residents all participated along with some grant funding in order to do the trail, or the lane, the bike lane. Coming out of there. I like that model. I thought it was a really workable model. And so what I would ask of everybody here is a model for us to look at the possibility of the school system and the city working together along with citizens of Gilbert to cover half of whatever that bike lane costs for that mile and a half. Darren says you think it's in the $300,000 range.
Yeah, I'll get you better numbers soon if I can get them.
But if you guys could take out half of that, then we're full participants together. It still is the county's responsibility to pave a county road. It's the county's responsibility to do whatever we've got to do with the drainage district, working with the drainage district, to do what we've got to do with the drainage district. But then this extra above and beyond amenity that makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons becomes a true partnership between the county, the city, the school system, and I would hope that you guys would have the ability to pull citizens in, which will help us with getting right away, will help us with a lot of things. Is that a model that is worth us really exploring? So it's $150,000 bill is what I'm asking for, roughly.
Yeah. But then with the county taking on the road.
County doing everything else as part of it. It would be you guys in for half of the skin on the path.
And that half, including if we can get grants or anything to go in with that.
I would say grants above and beyond the existing trail grant that was. So I'm wanting to take the 50 that I think might still be out there and use that as part of the county's portion. I'm saying 100. Okay. And other grants, I'm all in on you guys using. Darren, you and I haven't talked about this, so I don't know if I'm getting way out ahead or if you think it's an idea worth exploring.
Yeah, that all sounds fine. I just want to make clear on the $50,000 existing grant. I don't know if that's completely expired yet.
Right.
The difficulty with that was given for buying right-of-way only for another alignment.
Along the river.
And that's what they approved.
Right.
If we change that, we'd have to get approval again through CERPA. That's one thing. And two, that's federal aid money. We bring that into this whole entire paving, it makes the entire job a federal aid job. So we have to design the whole thing for federal aid requirements, and it probably end up costing more than the grant.
Yeah.
So that makes it difficult, unfortunately.
And the only thing I would say, I was not saying that we were going to get that $50,000 grant. I was saying if that $50,000 grant were to come through, I'd want to use it on the county's portion. But then we're the ones who are eating the rest of that anyway. Other grants, man, I would be really, really open to us splitting the value. You know, it ultimately reduced the cost of the project.
Sure.
So I would be willing to say half of the actual public cost of the project, we split that. And if so, then if we get $100,000 in grants and it's a $200,000 project, we're splitting $100,000 each. And I can talk to you guys.
Well, this is a good conversation. I'm glad you really had time to analyze and so forth. But where does the old concept of dollars from the old Safe Route to Schools concept? Is there ever money available there? And does bike lanes fit factor in, or are we just talking about roads in that case?
For the most part, with that last transportation bill, that Safe Route to School kind of went away. You can apply just through the state now, but it's a very small amount of money compared to what it used to be. And SERPA doesn't even offer that anymore.
So
it's probably not a route we could take. We could apply for more bike path money.
Right, and that's what I was going to suggest again, that maybe...
I think Mike's already applying for that
then
series.
...work with you and then do SERPA right again to see if there is some basically funding there. And as you and I talked last fall, you know, with the including Gilbert and the MPO, you know, some potential flexibility is no longer available without, you know, their cooperation. And I was thinking only in terms of if you were needed leverage for dollars through the Ames MPO, whether or not there's anything that we could still have that conversation. And I don't know how much that amounts to, but the mere fact that they now annex into there, I mean, that adds dollars to the Ames. You know, and so I just think it needs to be part of the conversation. You know, how are you doing?
I think that's a reasonable approach, Rick. We can't sit here and say, yeah, we can do that, but that's something that we can at least go back. We've got a long-range task force that's getting kicked off this month. I guess the question would be, what sort of timeline, back to John's question, what sort of timeline in order for us to say, yep, we got it, is that this March 15th?
Well, March 15th is when we would determine what dollars we were putting in.
Okay.
So for me, what it would mean is if we were to reach... understandably, not a binding agreement, but if we were to reach, this is what we're going to work on, then I would think that we would endeavor over the next month or so to find the dollars necessary, less that amount, to do our portion of it. You're going to know on March 15th whether, in fact, we came up with our portion.
Yeah.
And what it would mean to me is if you guys then were not able to do it, it would mean that that path would be in real jeopardy of not getting done.
Sure.
There is all that. I mean, I know you'd be spending time designing and everything else as we go.
That's fine.
But it's something that we can just pull out of the project. If the dollars aren't there, we can pull that path out of the project and still pay it.
Yeah. And additional issues like Darren brought up with the tile or additional right-of-way land or, for that matter, the intersection at 190th. I mean, that'll just all be factored.
As I'm proposing this, that would all be county responsibility.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is that I think that the bike lane is a necessary bike path, not a lane. The path is a component that takes this from being a nice project, albeit expensive, a nice project, a necessary project. It takes it to the next level, and I think it is a real benefit to all of Gilbert, clearly all of the school system, but I also believe the county, and I think it's completely reasonable for us to have an expectation that it not just be county dollars going in to do something like that when it has such direct benefit to other entities. John, what do you think?
Well, I've ridden a bike on G.W. Carver.
Yep.
So far,
do you think this would be met reasonably favorably from the city?
Oh, I think you'd get a lot of positive feedback.
And that was another question that I was listening to the explanation. I think if they start to set, I think the important is to have public input session where we can kind of explain, the project and where we are. And so people can visualize, you know, the whole thing. They're much more apt to, you know, come on board. It's the uncertainty and the unknowns that causes a lot of, you know, trepidation on the part of a lot of people. And I would just maybe let you do such a hell of a job of representing the county in this regard. And then, but I think if somehow when you have some of your meetings and do your community outreach, having you be a part of that, I think would be really a good point for us, because it ties in again, you know, how each of the entities are trying to work together to make this a reality for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd be happy to participate in any way that you guys feel would be helpful in pushing it forward. What I would see, though, Wayne, as our role is, if we finish this conversation, if you guys are okay with this being the conversation, then our next step here over the next hour and a half or so is to try to figure out, okay, can we find the dollars in our budget to do the portion that we're saying we would do if we were able to pull all this together? And we may find out, no, you know what, we can't do it. Well, then it's easy. Then it's not nice, but it's easy. Then we're. But if we do, then you guys have something to move forward with, and it is really how important is that bike path to this entire project, because it's never going to be cheaper to do than when we go in and do the road. It makes a lot of sense to me in terms of what Ames is doing out to 190th that you would want to go in and do this whole thing, and I like the partnership aspect of it.
I think it's great just as a communication and public relations. So, but I think it's reasonable. I think it's opportunity for the school and the city to sit down. And so if John's shaking his head and Lindsay's shaking his head, I think that's a good proposal, Rick.
You guys good with us starting on that?
Okay.
Anything else that we can do for Gilbert or the Gilbert school system?
Anything?
Now's the time. As it relates to roads, now's the time for you.
As it relates to roads. Oh. I was going to go down and talk about penny sales tax. How about that?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
so appreciate it.
And thanks for accommodating us starting off
in 10. I think it was in 14. So. It's huge, but it's
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Okay. Darren, anything you want to start off with?
I guess I'd start real quick with the overall summary of the budget we submitted. Grant was in our program to be put in here for this year, so that's how I submitted the budget. A year ago at this time, we weren't even having a discussion. There was no way to do it.
Right.
The fuel tax was approved last year, and we hadn't budgeted that extra $600,000 to $650,000 FY16, so that's not planned to be spent this year. We got a little bit in 15, and we'll get another $660,000 in 17. So it's doable if we can make this work. But like I say, a year ago, this discussion wouldn't be taking place without the fuel tax increase. So the budget we put together, we ended up with a just over $2 million ending fund balance and a 24% carryover with grant included. So just to give you an idea of where we stand with the overall submittal. Other than that, I can go ahead and start in on the revenue side. On revenues, of course, that third item, the road use tax increased greatly. We had to reestimate the current year up $660,000 due to the fuel tax increase. That takes us up to $4.1 million in road use taxes, and just about the same in 17 proposed. Nothing else changed except the state payments. We reestimated that down. That's just because of our federal aid bridge money coming in. That Maxwell Bridge probably won't come in 16, so we pushed that $280,000 into 17 as a revenue coming in, but we took it out of this current year. Other than that, revenues are pretty much about the same as they were last year.
Darren, philosophically, how much does the cost of gasoline factor into the road use tax?
The cost of fuel really doesn't impact that much. People buy a little bit more because it's per gallon. It's not per dollar. It's per gallon. So people buy a little bit more gas when it's cheaper, so it increases a little bit. But for the most part, it doesn't affect it a whole lot.
Yeah, except I would just underscore, when if gas goes up to, you know, $4 a gallon,
right,
we're going to see less.
Less, because people are driving less. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Are there some more places we can re-estimate some current year revenues here? Like trip permits and insurance and damage payments?
Yeah, Lori and I talked about the trip permits. You said we were up to almost...
It's 6,200.
6,200. That probably could be estimated up some. Most of our annual permits come in the first half of the year. That's the majority of the money, so it won't probably be greatly increased, but I don't know if you had a feel for what we can bump that to.
What if it was in?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't want to go much above 8.
Yeah.
At this point.
All right, well, let's take that to 8 for this year.
And then insurance and damage payments, I know that's always a crapshoot, but it was $17,000 last year, $13,000 the year before, we're at $13,000 this year. 15? I think you're bringing in
$15,000
insurance
payment. We have a couple more guardrail damages out there that are ones a little significant, so
that money that's come in is from drainage.
Yeah.
From the tiles being broke.
Utilities damaging.
Is most of that the gas line coming in? I mean, is that?
No, it's a lot of them just, any type of utility.
They just bore right through it.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they don't show up for years until that pipe creates a hole, and then we see the line right through it. So a lot of times we don't even recognize it right away.
But you think we can go to 15 on that?
Yeah, we can get by with that.
Can we keep it as 15 for next year as well? I mean, since it's what that looks like, it's going to be 17 last year, 13 the year before that. If we can go to 15, both re-estimated and for FY17.
Sounds good. I didn't really touch on the very first item much, I guess. That was the... due to the pipeline inspections and what happened there, the 75.5 in the current year, the main pipeline didn't go, but we had another line pipeline pop up, and that cost us about $26,000. So we kept the 27 in there and re-estimated it down to 27, but next year it's back up to 75 if the pipeline gets approved.
But that's just money in, money out, right?
Yeah.
But we're spending that to have somebody go inspect it.
Correct.
Yeah. The way I put the revenues together, I changed, or your budget together, I changed the amounts for requested to the minimum 75% of the valuation.
Okay, that's what those are based on.
So that's what those two are based on.
Okay.
But we still have the ability. Even if this is what we put in the budget, we still have the ability to transfer more funds from the general fund, or not transfer, utilize general fund dollars to do any work we want to do in secondary roads.
Right, and you also have the ability to transfer more money there if you want to for both in both of those.
This is just what we're committing to, enough that we get the
minimum.
Get the full dollars that we.
Okay. Right.
Darren, this is not directly tied to the budgeting question here, but when you talked about that, I was thought about the liability of the inspection. There are certain projects that we do that we have to have an inspector basically out, and I was thinking about the lawsuit that's probably going to be astronomical to our neighbor to the south, where the hole they were digging and the inspectors probably went out, should have shut the project down and didn't, and fatality. So when we have people coming in, at what role is the county's out of liability out of it when we have to have projects done and it's an outside entity that's responsible for doing the inspection? Or do we still have to have our own person?
Are you talking more utility work or actual
utility and or things like the culverts and stuff of that nature where we, you know, are digging a large hole?
For the utilities, essentially, they sign off on a permit. It says they'll meet the MUTCD, which is the traffic signage. So that kind of tells us that they have signed off. They're going to follow all those rules. They have the right to work in the right-of-way. We can't stop that. We just tell them where they need to go. We don't inspect, that they're doing the work according to OSHA standards and everything. That's really not our role. I don't think we can be sued on that. You never know. But I think we're clear of liability in that case. Our construction projects, again, the same kind of follows there. That falls under OSHA rules. We cover that in our pre-construction meetings, that they need to be following those rules. We remind them if we see something, and for the most part, they do a good job out there. So, but liability, you just never know. You could drag the county, and they have insurance that covers the county for all our projects, too. Even the utilities, they also have insurance that we require that covers the county if something did happen.
Didn't mean to get you off track.
Oh, that's fine. So move on to revenues.
Expenses,
sorry.
Yep.
Okay. Roll on my revenue sheet. Okay, starting out with administration, there was really no change in that category. We have those numbers pretty well defined for each year in there.
Bottom four on page 94, so starting with bargaining unit staff, pay plan staff, not extra help, leave extra help like it is, and maintenance staff. It's our expectation that we're going to budget 94% of that again this year as we did last year. You're seeing the full 100%. You're seeing 27 pay periods instead of 26 for this next year. So everything's going to be skewed just a little. I think when you see a final approved budget, unless something changes during our conversations here, you're going to see a final budget that's going to have 94% of that just like this year, and then we'll come back and we'll amend back into it second half of next year. Okay. This is all that right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So you'll see those go down.
Okay. So no change in our administration. Engineering, we have, again, the pipeline inspection under the first consultant item. So that takes that up to 90,000. 75 of that is the pipeline inspection. Supplies item went down considerably. That's because we had our GPS unit out of this current year, and that only comes up every 5 to 10 years. So we're back down to our normal amount for supplies. And then this is a bridge inspection year in FY17, so the additional 45,000 for bridge inspections. Bridges and culverts, a bit of an increase there. That was just kind of bumping up our bridge repairs a little bit more, closer to what we've done historically. We went down a little bit last or this current year, but we got the bridge inspection reports done last spring, and they've identified a number of concrete bridge back walls that could take some repairs, so that's probably where that money will go. Moving on, on to gravel.
Rush yeah, rock. Page,
97.
You're on 97.
Yeah.
Just a little bump up in the gravel. That consumer price index went up a little bit on that, so it kind of holds us even what we've done in the past. That gets us at least our quarter mile of the county re-rocked according to our strategic plan. Probably gets us a little bit more than that quarter of the county done. Patching, that's fairly close to what we've done historically. Last year was a little bit higher due to some, again, we're trying to get that North Dakota done with our maintenance money, some overlays. We have one more overlay left that may get, squeeze that in there this FY17 or the year after, I'm not sure. But we'll get that money spent one way or another on crack sealing and stuff like that. The county tile item's always somewhat difficult to estimate, but there's three numbers there. The top one, 40,000, is the stuff we have in our road ditches that we repair. The second one is the repairs we do on drainage districts, and we do get reimbursed for that. But I wanted to bring this item up a little bit because we've changed our policy a little bit, where we might see more ditch cleans done where we don't go through the whole engineering process. We had one of those just completed. It was around $10,000. We got to pay those out of our budget. So we got to, I don't know, we got to be careful how many we do, or just, my thought was we'd probably just see how many came throughout the year and amend our budget in the spring if need be. But that number might be a little more variable in the future because of, I know we've got a couple more proposed people want us to do without. We've got that 500% rule now on the drainage district repairs, where we don't need to go out with a full engineering report. So we can leave that the same, but I just want to make you aware that might be a little more variable now, and we'll just cover that by amendments. But that money will continue to flow through our budget to pay the contractors up front.
So if we decide that we're going to put those more cleanups more on a maintenance schedule, I mean, I know that we've done, you know, what Joe and Tyler can do. And this kind of stems from a conversation I had with our friend Steve Kalkhauser.
Yeah.
Here a month or two ago about, you know, why don't we, in addition to that, why don't we start doing more cleanup maintenance instead of having it. $800,000 project turn us into phase. Why don't we do smaller portions? And there is some, there is some merit to that. I think it makes sense.
So, it sure would be a hell of a lot more palatable to our drainage district residents. Nobody likes seeing that on their bill, but it's easier to see a smaller one multiple times than it is to see a huge one pitch it once every 20 or 30 years.
And I think that's more of a conversation we have than Joe's here.
Absolutely.
But no one is going to have some impact.
Well, budgetarily, I get what they're saying. Since it has to flow through the engineering budget, we just need to stand ready to amend the engineering. The money's coming back in. It may be 18 months later,
yeah.
Right? But it's coming back in. We just got to find a way to make it cash flow and work within the constraints of your budget, since that's a little different.
The latest one that Steve's talking about, he's talking almost 2 miles of cleaning. That's going to push it way over 50,000. And it's actually controlled by Boone County. And they've changed their rules recently, too. But anything over 50 for them triggers the engineer's report and everything. So I know Steve would like to see that be done hourly, even with his equipment. But I don't think that's going to be able to be done according to Boone County's rules on this one, since they're the controlling county. But
Well, now, in my law, it seems to me that it's a really fine line that we would walk between doing small clean-outs. It really starts to look quickly like you're trying to circumvent the rules of what it made. So if we came back and we said, yeah, we're going to clean things out, but we're only going to do it a quarter mile at a time.
Right.
But really, you're doing a two-mile stretch.
A quarter mile at a time.
It looks like you're trying to get around.
And this district particularly, we've already done two little cleanouts the past year or two, so starting to look like that.
Yeah, I want to be really, really careful. You don't even step up to that line.
Yeah.
Right. And his conversation, in all honesty, is pretty self-serving because he's got the equipment. And he's going to put that equipment to work. And I told him, I said, your plan does have some merit, but you have to understand that you'll have to compete for the bid like anybody else would. And to start that off, you've got to be bonded. And we didn't get into that conversation. And I don't know if he is or isn't. So, yeah. So for me, that's where there's a difference in the brush cleaning. And this,
right.
Brush cleaning is reasonable to me to say, okay, we're going to do however many
correct
miles or feet a year.
Yeah.
This bid cleaning is a little different.
Okay, that's the whole road maintenance category is actually down a little bit for the total. That takes us into snow and ice control. We stayed the same at $100,000 there. Might be a good time to discuss that a little bit. Been losing a little sleep the past couple nights about our salt supply. It's just the process is terrible, but I don't know a way around it. There's one little supplier in Ames that supplies the DOT and all the surrounding counties, and it comes off the train. We signed up back in the spring for 800 tons of salt. And then Thanksgiving time, we started to use a little bit, and right away we put a 300-ton order in to get it. And it just doesn't come in quickly enough, so he tells us constantly, yeah, it's coming, and puts us off because he's got to supply everybody with what comes in. The key is we got to have storage. We're just about out of salt right now, and that's not a good situation. We have contingency plans, but we might be putting less salt down. You might see more on the ice on the straightaways because we just can't. We go probably a little higher than some of the surrounding counties, and we try to get all that ice off as quick as we can. Our policy states that we don't have to do that. We do the intersections, make sure people can stop, but we get to that point where we run out. But he did supply us with two trucks yesterday of salt, but it's just a bad situation how it gets distributed, and I don't know a way around it.
How much storage do we have right now?
Our building in Nevada has 600 tons on one side, and the other side is mixed material, so it's about half salt. It's about 900 tons of salt. We've been averaging 1,000 to 1,200 a year, but we've gotten that in the winter. We're always a little nervous towards the end of the winter. This one makes me extra nervous because we're just starting January, and we're already out. We have a little bit left in there, but...
Well, it seems to me we ought to have enough storage to get through the whole year. We ought to have enough salt as we start winter every year to get through that whole year, and then we figure it out
during the off time. And so
if we don't have enough storage, we're talking about two buildings, one
still this year for secondary roads, and another one next year. Now, I don't know if a
salt storage component of either one of those buildings makes sense or not, but it just seems to me, you're telling me we've got storage capacity for 900 tons. We need more like 1,100 or 1,200 tons. Seems to me like we better be digging in and figuring out. We should have the storage where when it's available to buy, we can go ahead and stockpile all that we think we'll need.
And we've been thinking about what to do here, especially right now, and the Kelly shed, how big of a... We were going to put something smaller, but we might need to bump that up a little bit, get a little more storage there. That's a discussion we need to have.
Well, the other thing I don't want is, there's a cost. You're telling me the salt comes off the train.
So we've got to pay to haul it from where it's coming off the train to wherever we're storing it, and then we've got to pay to haul it from there to get it down on the roads.
Yeah, our contract, they haul it to our shed.
Okay.
They get it off the train, and they haul it, truck it to our shed. So that's taken care of in the bid process.
The key, again, is location, and my concern is more visibility type thing, because you're talking about storage shed. If it's in a remote area, I can see potential land that we get for them, they don't do that. And of course, the one you got over here is highly visible and so forth. So in the Slater shed or the one that we were talking about, where it's going to be, how's the visibility there?
If we end up with that Kelly site, that's right on R38, so it's a lot of traffic on that road. Right across from the old gas station. It'd be a pretty good site, I think.
There's no room here in Nevada for anything additional? Or would you rather have it work?
Well, we're looking at maybe converting some of our old Quonset huts to put some, but those are metal and salt don't mix very well.
But there would be an advantage of having something though in another area, eastern or western part of county too, for us, just proximity of hauling traffic and so forth. You've got a lot of area out there to cover.
Discussion we need to have. All the counties around us deal with the same thing, and it's frustrating. And because last year we got down toward the end of the winter, and we were running low, and you call down to Kansas, the mines and everything, and you can't even send a truck down to pick up salt. If you don't commit back in the spring, they won't even give it to you down there. So there's no way to even get it.
Which is why it seems to make sense to me that we find a way to stockpile enough to get us through 1 year. I don't know. I haven't asked you. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. That's what all the counties want, if they can figure out how to get that stored somewhere. A couple of counties, Hamilton, always ask me if we could come up with maybe a bigger facility that we share somewhere. So we've always are throwing those ideas around, but it's a difficult thing to do, sharing such a wide area like that.
And there's not space in Roland. So when we talk about doing the new Roland shed, there's not space there to put in a lot of storage.
We talked about using the existing shed as salt storage, but the way the building's going to be configured, it's going to be hard to get into the building, keeping that one there, so it might have to be torn down, but we're looking at the possibility of that. But I don't think there'd be enough room to build a bigger new one there.
But Kelly, if we take the property that we're talking to Iowa State about, we do have space there. We can design something there to at least have enough storage if we're willing to pay for it.
Yeah. We're getting some costs on some hoop buildings that, like, I don't know if you've seen Nevada's right next to our shed. They put a hoop building in. I don't think that was terribly expensive.
Yeah, because that's all pretty much prefab. They bring those big cement, almost like a cement highway barrier in.
Yeah.
Build a 6-foot wall with those, and then there's a hoop, you know, prefab hoop over the top of that.
Right. I don't think it has to be anything elaborate. We just need to be able to store salt in a way that we have enough. You shouldn't be sitting here 1st of January worried about not maintaining our roads in terms of ice to the level that our citizens have been accustomed to, right? We've got money in the budget to do it. We've done everything that we're supposed to do. You just can't hit it.
Yeah, correct. So, well, I just wanted to bring that up since it's the current topic, and we need to be having those discussions here on hopefully improving that in the future. So that item stayed the same as last year, $100,000. Takes traffic services, really no change in that's our pavement markings, traffic control stays about the same.